The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Welcome. My name's Mary Larson. I am a proud Gryffindor.
And do you know that my name's Blake, obviously? And do you know that
you're a proud Slytherin?
Oh, you're very, very, very proud Slytherin. And I kind of feel bad for Draco in this chapter. Just a tad. Just a little bit. You want to know why?
Sure.
The kid gets turned into a ferret. Like, come on, man. That's pretty brutal stuff. And he gets whacked on the ground a number of times.
Yeah, do you know how many times Harry Potter's almost died so far?
I'm not saying that Harry hasn't almost died yet. I'm just saying the kid gets turned into a ferret. And it gets smoked by Mad-Eye Moody. But, however, a big, big however. So before you all come over here and blah me to death, I also understand that what Draco does in this chapter is bad news stuff. Bad news stuff. I mean, making fun of moms and just...
Don't mess with Molly Weasley.
And in ways...
Don't you mess.
And in ways that is just not nice. I agree that he somewhat deserves it, but somewhat feel bad for him.
Wouldn't necessarily be allowed in teaching in 2021. We'll put it that
way. No. I think it's not even allowed in 1994.
Hi. Well, this, of course, is chapter 13, and we're going to delve into the chapter titled Mad-Eye Moody. Moody, he said. How cool is he? Beyond cool, said George, sitting down opposite Fred. Super cool, said the twins' best friendly Jordan, sliding into the seat beside George. We had him this afternoon, he told Harry and Ron. What was it like? Said Harry eagerly. Fred, George, and Lee exchanged looks full of meaning. Never had a lesson like it, said Fred. He knows, man, said Lee. Knows what? said Ron, leaning forward. Knows what it's like to be there out there, doing it, said George impressively. Doing what? Said Harry. Fighting the dark arts, said Fred. He's seen it all, said George. Amazing, said Lee.
Your favorite character, by the way, Lee Jordan.
He's not my favorite character, but he would have been my friend.
Yeah, he's pretty close to being your favorite. He's at least a top three.
No, he's not.
Really?
No.
Are you sure?
100%.
But he would be your friend at least?
Hagrid, Hedwig, Dobby.
Good point. Good point. Where's Harry in all that list for you?
He's still in the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to like hang with Harry all the time. He's kind of like Debbie Downer. It's like a, Frodo.
He's like emotional. Frodo sucks.
Frodo's
the worst.
No, okay. I would still be friends with him. I'd still be like in his classes and chilling and everything. But yeah.
Frodo might be the worst character in fiction.
No. Just the person that you would like to hang out with the least in fiction. That's who you least likely want to hang out with.
Such a whiny little...
Oh my gosh, Blake? Okay? When you are sick, I'm going to start calling you Frodo.
Do you know what Frodo would be?
Oh, my head hurts. All right, Frodo. All right.
Do you know what Frodo would be? A Hufflepuff.
Frodo is the epitome of Gryffindor.
You think so?
He's very brave. Very brief. The Hufflepuffness, one would think all hobbits, you know, fit into. But I think that, you know.
Samwise is definitely a Hufflepuff.
He also may be a Gryffindor as well. He's quite brave, too. They're both Griffin Puffs.
No!
Okay. So, anyway, before we get into the show, we want to thank all of you who are tuning in live. Let us know where you're tuning in from, what your house is in Hogwarts as well. And we want to thank all of our friends who are members at jointhenerdclan.com. If you're watching us live, put hashtag GoNerdClanGo so we can see you there. What is the Nerd Clan? It's basically like our community, our place where we give extra little love in for people who support this show for as little as $2 a month. Just go to jointhenerdclan.com and you can make a huge difference at Mary and Blake Media. Thank you so much for those of you who are already members.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Quick little recap in this, of course, chapter 13, Mad-Eye Moody. This is where we hang out with our trio, but mostly it's Harry and Ron, who are now in their fourth year, so they're hanging out in Herbology, where they learn how to capture boober tuber pus. Yes. We get to meet blast-ended Scroots, which may become a problem a little bit later with Hagrid and his class. We have some astronomy time, but it's actually happening in divination. Who two worlds collide. And Draco Malfoy is just a big old punk. He's a punk, and then Moody turns him into a ferret, and then McGonagall tells him not to, and we just have everyone geek out about how incredibly cool Mad-Eye Moody is.
He, to me, strikes me as a pretty cool guy. But the thing I keep struggling with is that it's not Mad-Eye.
That is the beauty of this chapter, folks. It is titled Mad-Eye Moody. Mad-Eye Moody is not in this chapter.
At all. Not one ounce.
Zip. Zip.
Just
the only Mad-Eye Moody that truly is in this chapter is mentioned in the Daily Prophet that Arthur Weasley tries to go help.
And even then, we don't even know that's Mad-Eye Moody. Well, it's not.
No, yeah, by the time the press got on there. But the ruckus was the OG Mad-Eye Moody.
Not even necessarily. Because it was Barty Crouch who tipped over the dustbins. Yeah. And so, like, you don't even know when, like, that
when
exact
the
moment
happened with Peter. And yep. Okay. So that's what I think is hysterical, is that A, it's not even him. And that's what this chapter is called. And B, we're not even really hanging out with Mad-Eye Moody that much. It's really like, it should have been titled First Day of School.
Yeah. Like, so something along those lines. But yes. I mean, Mad-Eye Moody. This is the problem with this character. We have to... How do you want to... I know we talked about this last episode, but I want to figure out how you want to approach this character. Do you want to approach Mad-Eye Moody the way that we're supposed to, meaning we believe that this is Mad-Eye?
No.
Or do you want to approach this character with full knowledge? Okay, so...
Full knowledge. Then we can also see it through the lens of the current students. But that's what's cool about doing a reread and already knowing. And for those of you who are reading this for the first time, we're so sorry, but it's not Mad-Eye Moody.
And we've
it's
told
Barty
you that this
Crouch
is a spoiler podcast.
Drinking some Polyjuice Potion, who you don't even necessarily know, Barty Crouch Jr., totally okay. But I think it'd be fun to be looking at this through the lens of Barty Crouch Jr. and then say, okay, but this is what the students see. Because what the students see is what we get when we're reading it. We get that everyone thinks he's super cool. He's standing up for Harry. You know, he's just here for 1 year.
Sure.
He knows things. He's seen things. We get all that. We're going to do it from the flip side.
So here's another question. Is Barty Crouch Jr. just saying it's for 1 year because that's what Barty Crouch Jr. knows he can only get away with? Or is that something that really happened?
Dumbledore really asked Mad-Eye Moody to come and teach for just 1 year.
Okay. Yes. All right. Fair enough. Here's how I think I kind of want to begin this discussion.
Okay.
So now that we are approaching this character as if we know full well that it's Barty Crouch Jr., right?
Yes.
The fact that Barty Crouch Jr. trolls Draco Malfoy the way that he does by turning him into a ferret and doing the whole thing. Is that something that that he thinks Mad-Eye would do, or is that something he genuinely wants to do? Because
I think he genuinely wants to do it for a variety of reasons.
What are those reasons? And this is exactly why I wanted to start this conversation.
I think he wants to earn Harry Potter's trust. You know, like, he can't have people cursing Harry Potter. He needs to be able to put Potter's name in the Goblet of Fire. Yes. There is a plan, you know. But I do. I think he wants to. He continually is going to be buddy-buddy with Harry. He wants to earn his trust. He wants to be able to, like, get to know him so that he can make sure that he can meet Voldemort at the end. So he's pretty much Potter's guardian angel in some way, yep. shape, and form.
Yep.
The other thing is that Draco Malfoy's dad, Lucius Malfoy, used to be a Death Eater, but never got caught. Like, yeah. never did enough bad stuff and probably went into hiding and might have said, like, oh, I was under the Imperius curse. Like, I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics right now, and I'll look into it. But for one reason or another, Lucius Malfoy was not out in the open as a Death Eater. He was not caught. He was not prisoned in Azkaban like mm-hmm. the true loud Bellatrix Lestrange, Barty Crouch Jr., like all these other people were like known and tried and put aside. You had Snape who was known and tried, but of course then he said, I'm going to go play for Dumbledore's
right,
team.
Right, right.
So I'm going to do a little bit more research to figure out what happened. Either Lucius Malfoy wasn't like proud and out about the fact that he was a Death Eater, mm-hmm. or he then fibbed. To kind of like save his hide. But I think that there's a big part of Barty Crouch Jr. that resents Lucius Malfoy. You know, he says, I know your father. Tell him that I'm looking over you. Because he knows, A, that would scare Lucius Malfoy in general because yeah. Mad-Eye Moody would know what Lucius has done. But also, Barty. That's
Barty speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barty to me, like, what? Here's a question for you, Mary. And mm-hmm. Did Barty actually engage with Voldemort? Like, was he an actual Death Eater? Like,
yeah.
I see you. You
Barty
see
Crouch
me.
Jr.?
Yeah. Was he an actual?
Yeah.
Like, okay, when Voldemort was around in the 80s, Barty Crouch Jr. was his boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Because to me, the way that it feels is that it feels to me that Barty Crouch Jr. is like he's like a fanboy. He almost reminds me of Kylo Ren in that way, where he's like, oh, I love Darth Vader, but I never hung out with him. I never saw him. I never talked to him. But I love him so much, I'm going to continue what he started. That's what I feel like with Barty Crouch Jr. Like he is one of those guys that really loves Voldemort, but never actually did anything with Voldemort. You see what I'm saying?
No, I mean, he was young. He was a teen.
Yeah, okay.
So if you keep that into perspective, you know, fanboy, but also can do bad things and can still...
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Because... and
he was there with Bellatrix Lestrange and, like, tortured the Longbottoms.
Okay.
He was in it.
All right. And oh, that's another layer that you have to talk about later on. You know, like
right?
the fact that he was there actually doing that to mm-hmm. Neville's parents, and then he puts Neville through the same thing later on. And like, he's, I remember from the film, obviously, that, you know, he's the one talking about the Cruciatus curse eventually. It's probably in the next couple of chapters or whatever. But
yeah. And that's what he did to this kid's parents.
That's what he did to his parents. Like, holy smokes, right?
That's deep.
That is a whole nother level. I find the interaction between Barty Crouch Jr. as Mad-Eye and Draco phenomenal and so interesting. Especially the differences between the film and the book. One of the big distinctions that's made in the book is that Mad-Eye says to Draco very calmly, tell your father that I'm watching. Like, mm-hmm. tell your father that I know all about him. Mm-hmm. But in the film, it is much more, it seems more menacing in the book than it does in the film. Whereas it's like, it was very boisterous and very, like, in your face and everything. What did you think about the differences between the book and the film in that particular scene?
I liked them for each what they were.
Sure.
I guess. You know, I think that Mad-Eye Moody, the way that he is portrayed in the books and the film, is pretty in sync for the most part. Mm-hmm. So if it's just a little line or a way that things are said here or there, I think that the directors probably made that choice because they thought it would be better on screen.
And then obviously we don't get the whole, like, going back and forth between mothers and everything in the film, the way that the book.
Yeah, we're not
going
to tell mom jokes. We're not going to like bust on people's moms. Right. Exactly. There's just no need and no time for it. I think in the films, we already can feel the animosity. One of the coolest things about the Harry Potter films is how much the viewers can hate Tom Felton as portraying Draco Malfoy.
Sure.
And really, I think it's something crazy, like the little amount of screen time that Malfoy has in the movies. Mm-hmm. It's like 30 minutes total or something. Like if you rounded all 8 movies up and took it all together, it's like a really, really, really small amount of time that Draco Malfoy is on screen.
Yeah.
And yet the directors did such a good job of making us hate him and making us feel the tension between he and Harry that they didn't need much more. So they don't need, I'm going to talk badly about your mom,
right,
because they took the most important tough things and made sure that those were there. So here, I'm learning a little bit more. I just wanted to clarify about Lucius Malfoy. So after Voldemort fell, the people who were still the Death Eaters, Lucius was one of those people who said that he was under the Imperius curse. He never did anything like severe in regards to torturing and killing and doing all this kind of stuff. He wasn't like Bellatrix. He wasn't like Barty Crouch Jr.
Sure.
in that level of what he did. And then, of course, we think to the Quidditch World Cup, which we just saw. He was part of those Death Eaters. And as soon as they saw the Dark Mark, boom, flew away. We're scared. And, you know, we even had people talk about that. Like, okay, those people are even afraid of Voldemort. Like,
right.
they don't even want to be seeing that thing. So, you know, we think about what he's done since the fall of Voldemort for this past, how many, you know, so
20
many
years.
Not 20 years. Harry is only in this thing.
Oh,
he's
sorry.
14.
See,
so 14 13
years.
Okay, 13 years. You know, he didn't do anything for 11 years. Then he did the diary. Like, that's pretty much the most that he's ever done. And then we get to see him where he gets to house the Death Eaters. He pretty much has, like, the Grimwald place of the Death Eaters in Voldemort.
He's the summer camp of the Death Eaters.
Yes, he's the shell cottage. So, you know, Malfoy Manor does play a part. But when it comes to him, he's more talk. He's more connections. But he's really there to save his own hide.
So you can see that Barty Crouch Jr. looks at Malfoy as a poser. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Exactly.
Who are you? Yeah. Okay, sure. You like, you think you're big time now only because it's safe. But when it actually mattered, you know, you were your tool bag. You know, like that's what you are. You're a tool bag.
Yes.
I can see that happen.
100%.
All right. Fair enough. And so when you talk about those multiple levels at Barty Crouch Jr. as Mad-Eye Moody and how he interacts with Draco, I love what you said about earning Harry's trust, Mary. Like, I think that is 100% true. But at the same time, we have this whole thing of Barty Crouch Jr. thinking that Lucius is just a tool bag.
Exactly.
And he loves tooling on that kid. Maybe to just kind of like get back at him almost. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, who are you? Like, you're not a real person. You're just a kid whose father's a tool.
Who's doing something that is wrong. Even Barty Crouch Jr. thinks that shooting someone behind their back is wrong. Like, come on, if you're going to duel, if you're going to fight, be a man about it, Malfoy.
And like, that's another thing, too. Does he really believe that? And my thought
probably
about that
is,
yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's just so much swirling around here. And just this one little scene. That is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And McGonagall coming up being like, what are you doing?
It's fun. Of course, you know, that part is pretty much bit by bit with, you know, what are you doing teaching? Is that a student? You know, it's what we get to see in the movie and it plays out so well. I almost read that part, but I'm like, everybody knows this part by heart because of the movie. So, you know, if you'd like, we can kind of pivot and tackle some of the other classes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Which are pretty much just fluff. They're just
you can see
expanding.
Why that this was removed from the film.
Yeah, well, it's just expanding the wizarding world.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily super duper important to the grand scheme of things, but we're here to hang out at Hogwarts, man. It can't all be like figure out the main source of plot, you know?
Yeah.
So we get to, of course, go to Herbology with Professor Sprout and get to go see the Boober Tubers.
Jim Dale's reading of this chapter is
spot on.
It is gold.
Yeah.
It is gold on every level, whether it is, you know, as we talked about Mad-Eye Moody. But in this particular case, as Professor Sprout, the way that he manifests her voice, is boo boo tubers. You must squeeze her. Like,
yes,
I can't even do it justice. I don't even know how he did it, but the way that he gets her voice and then explains the rest of the boobo tubers and how they have to squeeze them and they get the pus.
So gross.
And the everything. And how the pus gets rid of acne. And they're talking about the girl who who like shot her nose off.
Yeah.
Trying to get the acne off. And like, it's great writing and it is also just great delivery from Jim Dale.
Agreed.
Which is why I love him. To no boundaries.
He's won Emmys for his work through these voices of Harry Potter. And you just, if you're not reading along with the audiobooks, if you've never listened to the audiobooks, this would be one to check out. I actually have this one in like the CD set.
Oh yeah,
I only own two of them on the CD set.
It's this one and Deathly Hallows.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this one is a treasure. It's an absolute treasure.
And then you consider the audio fact that he has to not only do Professor Sprout, he's got Mad-Eye Moody, and he also has to do Trelawney in this one as well. Now, we know that he's not just sitting with a book and just reading as he's going. We all know that. They're splitting it up, obviously, and you can even tell sometimes when they split or stop and start the next reading.
Yeah.
Like the audio is just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, this guy's got all these different voices, and he has to manifest all of these voices all in one chapter. Trelawney is so different from Sprout, who is so different from Mad-Eye Moody, you know. Agreed. Like, and then all the kids on top of that,
everybody,
it's a lot.
Farrelly looked at this chapter and was like, wow, this is a fluff chapter in regards to plot, but it's got a lot of work to do right here.
Earn me that award.
As I said, it's just the expanding of the Wizarding World. It's hanging out and seeing, you know, the reactions from the different kids.
Right.
It's seeing Hannah Abbott, you know, just that Hufflepuff that we've been hanging out with all this time. It's seeing Dean and Seamus and hanging out with Lee. It's all these different people, because we need to remember we're in this school environment. It's the first day of school. You're excited to see all these people again for the first time. So fun fact, Boobatuber Pot. We're going to see it again later on in this book. Hermione's going to get some hate mail.
Oh.
And it's from this Boobatuber pus. So it's important to note how bad it is when it is saturated that you need to wear these dragonhide gloves. These are the dragonhide gloves that were on the kids' shopping list for the first year. Like back when they got there, like, congratulations, you've been accepted to Hogwarts. Here's the things you need to get. The dragonhide gloves, you know, also for the cold, since it's so cold up there, but also for really dangerous things. You know, things like Boobatuber pus. So we go from herbology with Professor Sprout, and then we head on over to Hagrid's class, you know, the Care of Magical Creatures. Now, it's interesting to note that this is an elective class, the Care of Magical Creatures. You don't have to do it from here on out.
Right.
And yet Draco Malfoy still signs up to do it.
Which is you wonder if he's doing it just specifically to troll Hagrid.
Possibly, or maybe he really loves animals and is there for like the cuddly kind, but he's too embarrassed to admit it.
Do you know what I'm kind of down with?
What?
I'm kind of down with the people that believe Draco is in love with Hermione.
I know.
I'm kind of down with that.
I know.
Because it's like the one redeeming thing that Draco has.
Except it's not true.
It's not true at all. But like, if you look at it from that perspective, it kind of reframes
why he picks on Ron so much.
Absolutely.
Because he's like, I kind of wish I was you. Why he picks on Hermione, because oftentimes people in that age, they pick on the person that they like.
Yep.
Why he chooses to be in these classes.
Yeah, my headcanon is that he chooses to be with the Care of Magical Creatures because he wants to be with Hermione.
There you go.
That's my headcanon.
And then they've got this back and forth, like, oh, why are they useful? Maybe they are. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm talking to her. I'm just going to keep saying things, even if it sounds outrageous and I'm rude. Even though what he says is actually true. So let's hang here at the Care of Magical Creatures with these blast-ended Scroots.
Yep.
The blast-ended Scroots, they're going to be crazy. I mean, not a big plot point. Obviously not even covered in the movie. You do see a blast-ended Scroot on the Hagrid ride in Universal Studios.
Really?
Man, I can't believe you forgot.
I don't remember at all.
After we waited 8 hours to ride that ride.
I probably looked at the thing for a half hour.
No, you didn't, because it was in the ride. You like on the motorcycle, and then you go.
So then I looked at it
like,
for 30 seconds. Yeah, not
you're,
even.
You're inside a building. You're inside. I forget if it was his house or whatever.
Yeah.
But the blasted screw at this point was giant, and it kind of like showed its butt and blasted.
Okay. Gotcha.
So the blasted screws, I think they grow up to be like 10 feet long or something bananas. One even ends up in the labyrinth that Harry has to fight.
Oh.
They all end up dying. I don't know if they end up eating each other. I forget. But like something happens. And they do end up eating each other? Okay, sorry. Our 8-year-old confirmed that. I thought so. I mean, the kids are going to be taking them on walks as they get to like 6 feet long. And they need. It's going to be crazy. So we're going to hang out with these gross blasted Scroots for a long time.
Okay.
And Draco Malfoy asks the important question. What are they even useful for?
Yeah, what are we even doing here?
What? Why? Why do we want these things can like suck our blood, blast us?
Yep.
They're an absolute menace, and they don't really have a reason, friends. I'm just going to tell you that in case you haven't read this book for a long time or you're brand new. Not really a good reason to have a blast-ended screw.
But, you know, Hermione makes a great point. Well, you know, dragon blood has all of this great usefulness,
but then she says she just made that up. She says, because exactly, she says that to Draco, you know, like, oh, well, maybe... You know, maybe they're going to have some use. Sorry, like you were saying.
Well, regardless of whether or not she made it up or not, who cares? The stats are for nerds. But the idea of the idea that Hermione is introducing is not everything that you think is useful is or is not useful isn't actually useless. There's points to a lot of these things.
But she does go on to say, you know, because Ron is saying things and he's like, you know, it won't matter that they're gross and scary if they turn out to cure seasickness or something, will it? And then Hermione says, you know, perfectly well, I only said that to shut Malfoy up. As a matter of fact, I think he's right. The best thing to do would be to stamp on the lot of them before they start attacking us all. But of course, they're there. They're here. They're to hang out with Hagrid.
Right.
We go. We see Hermione is shoving food in her mouth. She's no longer using this as, you know, a protest. She's like, there are a lot of other ways that I could be using my time. And she's going off to the library a lot.
Yeah.
It's the first day of school. She doesn't even have homework. Ron is like, I loved Ron's bashing of her.
Yes.
You know?
Ron, again... Also, Jim Dale as Ron in this chapter is just, it's beautiful. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm rereading it.
Oh,
you know?
I thought you wanted
it. He said, is this the new stand on Elfrights? You're going to make yourself puke instead?
And then Hermione's like, no, I found many better ways to do this. And he's like, yeah, and you are hungry too.
These interactions... remind me of me with my brother.
Oh, sure.
Like this is why, as sad as I am to admit it, I do think I'm mostly Ron.
Yes.
I'm a Ron Hermione.
You're very Hermione-esque. You would absolutely do this. I'm not eating thing. I'm going to the library instantly to find different
ways. But I would also bust on that person.
Totally.
Okay. Totally. What are you going to do now? Puke?
Yeah. Sure. Okay, great. Yeah, great job. And the other one that I love from Jim Dale as Ron in this one is, come on, Hermione, it's not even the first day.
Yes.
We haven't even finished. You're going to the library already?
Yes.
Oh, so great. So great.
After lunch, Harry and Ron have chosen to do divinations, and Hermione is deciding to do arithmetic instead, because once again, it's a course that they get to choose what they would like to do. It's optional. What's interesting is that Trelawney says, you know, you look preoccupied. I see difficult times ahead for you. Alas, most difficult. I fear the thing you dread will indeed come to pass and perhaps sooner than you think. And Harry, you know, kind of dwells on this a little bit. And even though we know 99% of the things that Trelawney says is
full of crap.
Fake.
Yeah.
And Harry reminds himself, okay, she usually just makes stuff up. But then again, last year what she said did come true. Does Trelawney know about my dreams with Voldemort? Does she know that I'm afraid that Voldemort's going to be coming back? And so it is interesting that she does sometimes say these things. And just like how I said, sometimes Harry has these dreams of things that do end up coming true. It could just be the luck of the draw, but it is interesting that she said this because all of that is true. The thing that he is afraid of is going to be happening pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Voldemort's coming back.
Yep. In speaking of,
but then she goes and she says that he was born.
Yeah, in December.
Yeah, in midwinter.
You're like, no, I was born in July.
Exact opposite.
Oh man, like yeah, you can't get any more opposite.
And then we got something that had you laugh out loud. Uranus. Oh,
you know, I laughed so hard. I laughed so hard at that moment. I don't even know why. It was just.
It's just like a 14-year-old joke. And here we are.
I'm laughing. I guess. Uranus too.
Oh, Professor, we've got an unexpected planet. Ooh, which one's that? It's Uranus, my dear. Can I have a look at Uranus too, Lavender? Which, of course, makes it even better is that Ron and Lavender are updating.
Like 2 years later?
Yeah. Yep.
It's just so stupid.
It is, but it's a 14-year-old joke. Being like, oh, I can say Uranus? I'm going to say Uranus. There we go. So you know, we've got our 8-year-old who just jumped in because he hears Daddy laughing, and he doesn't even know what that means. Like, that's the beauty of this, is that... There you go.
It's just the best.
It is. Trelawney does not think it's the best, though.
No, but I have to say, you're right, Mary. It is a 14-year-old joke, and it is so funny, and it's great that the author put that in there, but just because that is a joke that I would make. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so happy that it was made. Sorry, continue. Go on.
The only time I got kicked out of class was in seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I was about that age. And I made a joke about the male member.
Oh, really?
In health class.
Really?
Well, we were like seeing diagrams and like coloring pictures of them. And I was just, I made an inappropriate joke.
You killed coloring?
It's the only.
You were coloring?
Yes. I've also told you that in my health class in high school.
Why would you make them color it?
Welcome to the Warwick Public School System.
What?
In 11th grade, it was either 12th or 11th grade, we had to physically find prostate cancer in molds and testicular cancer in molds. Oh. Because that's what you have to worry about when you're 16.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I don't understand. And yet, Blake went to private Catholic school and didn't learn anything. I was like the other extreme. You know, it was like, oh, it's not just education about things. Here's everything you need to know. And I'm being very vague just because I know this is a family-friendly show. I'm just saying my education, it wasn't bad. It wasn't like teaching me bad things. No, it's just
those are all useful things, what you're learning for the most part, but making you color it in.
So that you knew the different parts.
Oh my goodness.
So, henceforth why I laughed too much and I was kicked out.
Oh,
only time I was kicked out in class.
That is so funny, man.
So Arthur Weasley is kind of in the paper. They get his name wrong yet again. The Weasleys, they just don't get.
Yeah, and you know what that does
too? Just don't get their names right.
And it shows you, I think, early on as a reader, and we all know what Rita Skeet is about.
Wimby. Weatherby.
But it shows you early on that Rita Skeeter is not a good person.
No.
And will mold anything to fit her agenda, and especially not taking enough time to recognize the details of a story like the guy's name. Like, just doesn't even care. Doesn't even matter. Like,
welcome to the press.
Is it Arnold or Arthur or like, you know, like, well, I don't even remember, dude. It's just, sure, Arnold. Okay, yeah. Like, that to me is awful.
What I thought was interesting in this is, once again, you don't know if she's just blowing things out of proportion and making up a lie or if it really was true. But she says, Mad-Eye Moody, the aged ex-auror who retired from the ministry when no longer able to tell a difference between a handshake and attempted murder. So obviously, like, you know, kind of joking. But did that actually happen? Maybe. I don't know.
You know what?
I don't know.
Mad-Eye is the kind of person that I think is extreme enough where it is believable.
Agreed.
And when you can take that and make that narrative the way that you want to, again, yeah, it shows you the kind of person that she is. She's there to make the most fabulous story there, mm-hmm, as possible. And if you take a little couple of details and you just stretch them out a little bit, well, how is it going to do?
And then, of course, there's a picture. And for some reason, there's a picture of the burrow, the Weasley's home. Yeah. Why that is important whatsoever, I don't understand. Why wouldn't it be a picture of Moody's house? Why wouldn't it be a picture of Moody? But instead, they decide to show the Weasleys' house. Mrs. Weasley is pictured, and of course, you know, Draco Malfoy thinks that it's very unflattering, and it shows how poor they are, and this runs into the whole your mama jokes.
Yeah, right. And, well, you know, again, I think it serves Rita Skeeter's narrative, her agenda. It's just to make things worse, as worse for the Weasleys, Arthur Weasley especially, as possible, because Arthur is the representation of the Ministry of Magic. Mm-hmm. And what she wants to do is to glorify this hatred and disdain and incompetence of the Ministry of Magic as much as she can. Mm-hmm. That is her agenda. And by showing this poor house and showing this family where, you know, she's the one that's doing the ultimate troll job, that's going to fit her agenda.
Yeah.
That's going to be the narrative that she wants to glorify.
We then get the whole ferret thing, which we talked about in great detail earlier on. We talked about Moody, you know, talking to Malfoy about his dad, all that kind of stuff. And then at the very end, it's everybody sitting down, chatting about their first day of school, talking about Professor Vector, who Hermione has for math, talking about just how super cool all of the 6 years. So Fred, George, and Lee, they're 6 years. Yep. And they got to have Mad-Eye Moody as their teacher today, the first day of school. And then Ron looks at his calendar and realizes they don't have him until Thursday. Yep. So, you know, just all in all, I feel like this chapter gave us the feeling of the first day of school. The newness, sure, seeing everybody again, trying to crack jokes, getting into little tiffs. You know, you got Hermione being the go-getter. And of course, Ron and Harry think that she's trying to just study her regular lessons when she's actually working on something else. But
there's another thing that happens here, too, that just kind of gives you a passage of time almost. Mm-hmm. Which is the word damn it is used, or the phrase damn it is used for the first time, I think, from one of the kids. And I think that's a real indicator of growth and aging, and even how serious this story is turning. You know, you have your
the
first
kids starting to use a little foul language.
Yeah, like, you have your kids just using foul language for the first time.
I actually didn't like it. I didn't like it because I don't think Ron Weasley, a wizard boy child, would use that phrase.
Why do you say
I
that?
I think that there would be like a magical equivalent, you know, Merlin's beard. Yeah, you know, I would think that there would have been something else. If Harry or Hermione had said it, being grown up in a muggle house, now being 14, being like, oh, I sometimes use naughty words, that would have made more sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me coming from Ron's mouth.
That's a great point, Mary.
And I just didn't like it because I'm like, oh boy, my kid didn't hear that. I'm just saying it's not the worst, but still.
Not the best.
Not the best. And also, I just find it out of character. Do I see Ron muttering like slight curses under his mouth?
Yes.
You bet. But I just see them being like
magical.
Yeah. Like just, yeah.
Yeah. Like not nonsensical, but just magical in nature.
Yes.
In other words, as you said, Merlin's beard.
Yes.
But the equivalent of that to damn it. I just think that, I think that's just an interesting, and I don't think it's a coincidence that that language is now introduced in this book.
Okay.
So I like that. I like that, that whole, you know, aspect.
Agreed.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about in this chapter?
That is it.
All right. It's time for the different perspective.
Oh no.
You got one?
Not really, but I'll think of one.
You got 39 seconds to figure one out. Okay, you ready? Okay, here we go.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger, and you are
Hagrid.
Hey, Hagrid! It's been a while, bud.
It has been the most amazing summer.
Okay, yep.
I just got some blast-ended scroots. I've got 100 of them, to be honest.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I am ready. I'm not going to hurt any children this year. The Care Magical Creatures class, we took Hippogriff off of the third year.
Don't want that around.
Yeah, I'm still able to have this job.
Yeah.
Not going to lie, it's a little hard to be the groundskeeper and teach all these lessons, but I'm ready for it, and I'm so excited. I've never had blast-ended Scroots before.
Yeah, you don't know how to feed them. You don't know what to feed them.
Can I be honest with you?
Sure, yeah. What do you got?
I don't know anything really? About them.
Do you think that's a smart choice, bringing them into the school? Because I feel like they may, you know, take...
To me, this is part of learning. To me, this is part of learning. If you're going to be learning about the care of magical creatures, sometimes you're going to be finding magical creatures that you get to learn about.
Sure.
You know? Newt Scamander... He wrote a little bit about it, but,
but not
honestly,
a lot.
And maybe it's because he thinks they're useless, but I bet you I'm going to find a use
There's
for
a purpose.
At least one of these guys this year.
Yeah, sure. They're going to run around and do things. Kids are going to take care
maybe
of them.
Maybe they're going to sing. Maybe they're going to dance. Maybe they're going to do something remarkable and cure something. If worse comes to worse.
You know what they're like, Hagrid? Yeah. They're like a Tamagotchi.
They are.
A Tamagotchi.
Like a muggle Tamagotchi.
Yeah, right. They're just there.
If they're cute, I may send them home with the kids each night
so they can
cuddle them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like cuddling.
Me too.
Cuddling's great.
I don't know what to feed them. So, you know, I've gotten a whole bunch of stuff and we're going to figure this out together. But I'm really excited to do this adventure together with my favorite class, Harry Potter's class.
Yeah, well, it's Harry. Come on.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, Harry's like your BFF.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like totally your BFF.
Yeah.
Do you secretly kind of want Draco to get hurt a little bit again?
No, not at all, because that was really bad.
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So not the greatest for your
that's
career?
That's why I just got these little blast-ended Scroots, okay? Yeah. Just they're little. We're going to try to feed them like frog livers, maybe a little lettuce. They're cute. They're small.
And hopefully they don't blast anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Or
this should be
they
okay.
They don't poison anybody or whatever. Yeah, yeah, hopefully we
I'm
get
I'm crossing my fingers on this one. What could go wrong?
Absolutely nothing.
End scene.
All right, cool. Good job. Good job, Mary. Good job. Well, as Thank always. You. Appreciate you.
I'm glad you appreciate me, husband.
Right now, we do not have any emails for us for this chapter. So I will say that if you want to get in touch with Mary and myself, you can. If you have any questions for us, whether it is about a chapter that we've already read, one that is coming up soon, or if you just have like general questions about Harry Potter or, you know, life in general, just life, whatever.
No.
Questions with Mary and Blake. No. We'll just do that. You can email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. And of course, you can reach us on all the social media platforms, whether it is Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and definitely not TikTok, because TikTok, Mary, is...
It's awesome and we are on it.
We're ruining America. Okay. Ruining America. And I refuse to take part in it. So if you do get in touch with us on TikTok, just know that it's Mary.
You're aggressive. All right.
So that's that for now.
Oh, my goodness.
Anything else you want to say?
That is it. That is it.
Ready to close this bad boy out?
I am.
Let's do it.
So incredibly much for tuning in to this The Potterverse. We absolutely are having a blast checking out The Goblet of Fire. For those of you, once again, who don't remember, this is a book Blake has never read. He's obviously been spoiled about a lot of the things. He did watch the movie. He's read essentially almost all of the other... Yeah, you've read now
all
of
the
other books.
Yeah.
So this is just an adventure as we get to delve into things like blast-ended Scroots and boo-boo-doo-boo puss. Like all different things that expand the wizarding world. We want to take a moment to thank those of you at JoinTheNerdClan.com. Once again, if you've been listening and if we bring you Lumos in the Time of Nox and you're not yet a member, we totally recommend that you do join. For as little as $2 a month, it makes a massive, massive, massive difference. This is my full-time job, hanging out at our media company. It's Blake's part-time job. We truly want to be your mom and pop shop podcasters.
That's right.
But we need your support. So JoinTheNerdClan.com is where you can make a big difference.
And just know that when you go there, you get tons of great stuff that is exclusive to just Join the Nerd Clan, whether it is book clubs or after doc shows or premium podcasts, bonus episodes of what we do. We got a lot going on over there. So JoinTheNerdClan.com.
On that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pair.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.